Okay, this week and next week are devoted to Inyanei Pesach and Haggadah. As is our custom, we begin by discussing a matter of halachic interest. Of course, there are no lack of halachic topics when it comes to Chag HaPesach. And I wanted to mention this evening a most fascinating question with regards to, well, it relates to many things. At the tip of the spear, one could say, it's about the issue of Mechiras Chometz, the sale of Chometz. Now, in order to understand the background to the question, we will actually have occasion to consider a number of important principles that meet us every Pesach, and it's very worthwhile to recognize them as such. As we know, there are a variety of things that you can do with your chametz in order to avoid the problems of owning chametz. You can do bittul chametz. You can destroy it. Many people sell their chametz. As we know, anyone who wishes to sell the chametz, and they'll do so via the rabbi. Important to realize, you're not selling your chametz to the rabbi. He's not interested in owning your chametz any more than you are. You are selling the chametz through the rabbi to someone who, hopefully, on this occasion, is not Jewish. And that sale needs to take place at a very specific time, namely before the sixth hour on Erev Pesach. And let us examine why. Why is that time critical? Beyond that time, the sale will not work. What happens at that time? So, the background to the question is as follows. As we know, there are a number of entities in Torah which are forbidden to be eaten. Treif food and the like. Isurei achila. There is another category of Isurim in Torah where it is also not only to eat the item, but also to get any benefit. You couldn't feed it to your dog or sell it or the like to get any type of benefit from it. And Chometz on Pesach is just such an entity. It is in the category of things that are also not only to eat, but also to get any benefit from. As the Pasuk says, Lo ye achel, which is interesting that it is grammatically in the passive. Lo ye achel, not only does it say don't eat, which of course it does as well, but lo ye achel means you cannot even be the cause for someone else to eat this if it's beneficial for you. Your animal can't even eat it. Lo ye achel, because that is benefit for you. Okay. Now, we should know that as soon as we have established that chametz on Pesach is forbidden, number one, to be eaten. Number two, for benefit, something else instantly happens. Namely, that chametz is not considered yours. It's not considered to be under your ownership. Because anything, ownership is a function of usability, first and foremost. Anything that you can't eat, can't use, have nothing to do with, is not meaningfully considered to be owned by you. And therefore, for example, on the first day of Sukkot, when a person wishes to take their Arba Minim, and one of the Arba Minim is an Esrog, now of course the Arba Minim need to belong to you on the first day, Ulekachtem Lachem. If that Esrog should be an Esrog of Orla, for example, you do not fulfill the mitzvah. And among the many reasons why is you can't own an Esrog of Orla, because an Esrog of Orla is in the category of things that are forbidden to be eaten or benefited from. You cannot own something like that. That being the case, as soon as we've identified chometz as something that you cannot eat and cannot use, that is another way of saying, as soon as that happens, you don't own it. Now, at this point, we have to consider something most important. Namely, there is another Isser Torah with regards to chometz on Pesach. The Torah, in some respects, is more machmer on Pesach than anything else. Namely, there is an Isser of owning chametz, called Bal Yeroeh u'Bal Yimotzeh, two Isurim actually. So, once that's true, in light of the above, we should see a question forming. Because on the one hand, you've told me that you can't eat chametz or get benefit from chametz, and that equals you don't own it. On the other hand, you told me you're forbidden to own chametz on Pesach. So I put two and two together, and it sounds like actually one aveira got me out of the other aveira. Because the fact that you told me that you can't eat or have benefit means I automatically don't own chametz. So perfect. It actually sounds impossible to violate the prohibition of owning chametz, because you can't own it, thanks to the first two prohibitions. So that sounds a little bit too easy. What is the response to that? So here we have the famous statement of Rabbi Eliezer that chametz v'pesach is in a highly unusual category of things which are eino birshuso shel adam. It's not in your domain. You're not naturally, through natural din Torah, you don't own it because it's forbidden for eating and benefit. But not so fast, because asa'on hakosuv ki'ilu hein birshuso. The Torah considers it as if you do own it, if you haven't destroyed it, for purposes of violating the prohibition of Bali Roe u'Bali Motze. As if to say, to put it in more colloquial terms, you are the honorary owner, or the virtual owner of the Chomet, for purposes of violating the prohibition against owning it, unless you did something, you took action. But just to rely on the fact that the Torah takes it out of your Rishus, that's the good news, it takes it out of your Rishus. The bad news is, it puts it back, unless you did something about it. Like you sold it, or you mevatel it, or you destroyed it. Now, the reason why all of this is an answer to our question is because you could almost say that once your chametz becomes forbidden for eating and benefit, that is to say it's not naturally yours, you have no control over it. That remains true. Your only connection is the aveira of ownership connection, but you've lost all natural owner relationship with it. And what that means is, anything that the owner would do to the chametz to get rid of it, for example, to sell it or to nullify it, to be mevatel, that it's out of your hands. From that point of view, it's out of your hands. It's almost connected to you in a way that you can't impact on. And that is exactly why anything that you need to do, that you wish to do to take action to get rid of the chametz, has to be done before it's taken out of your control, i.e. before the time that it becomes forbidden for eating and for benefit.
How can you sell something that you don't own?
That's exactly the point. You can't. That's why the sale has to happen before you come not to own it. That's exactly the point. Now the question is, at what point is it out of your hands? At what point do you stop owning it? At what point is it forbidden for eating and usage? Well, as we know, min ha-Torah, that cutoff point is midday, that is to say, halachic midday on Erev Pesach, Chatzos, which nowadays I think is shortly before, 12:45, something like that. That's Chatzos. Ach, by Yom HaRishon, ach, cuts the day in half. Yom HaRishon is Erev Pesach. From Chatzos, it becomes forbidden for eating and benefit. It's no longer yours in terms of your control. The Rabbanon, we should not be surprised to hear, added a protective measure. They added another hour because Chatzos is when the sun is in the middle of the sky, and middle is a rather flexible term, especially if you look at it for too long. And therefore, in order just to safeguard that a person shouldn't think, oh, I still have time, but really he doesn't, they gave an hour, another hour. That's the beginning of the sixth hour. And all of that leads us to the conclusion, that is why anything that you wish to do to your chametz, in terms of as the owner to get rid of it, has to be done before the beginning of the sixth hour, because that is the time that it is still in your domain to get rid of it. Post this time, you'll only be connected to it in a way that you can't affect it. And that's why the bittul chametz is done before the sixth hour, and when you arrange a sale, the time of the sale will be shortly before the sixth hour. And that is the situation as we have it. Now, The further intrigue of this matter, so far what we've just described is Erev Pesach in a Jewish household, without the smoke. The further intrigue in the matter is that, as we mentioned before, from the time that the chametz becomes forbidden to have benefit from, you cannot sell it, you cannot affect it in any way. And now, let us consider a classic question. It is going to sound like the most abstract question possible. And here it is. As we know, there are a number of things that you can't eat. Let us give two examples, and we'll instantly see that they are not the same. You are not allowed to eat treif food. Okay, you can't eat chazer. That's one example. Another example is, on Yom Kippur, you can't eat anything. Now, both of those are isurei Torah. They are both violations of a Torah prohibition, to eat non-kosher food and to eat food on Yom Kippur. But I think that we will appreciate that there is a qualitative difference between those two prohibitions. And here, with great delicacy, we introduce two terms, namely gavra, a person, and chefza, a chefetz, an item. That is to say, what is the focus of the Torah's prohibition? Has the Torah forbidden the food? This food is considered, there's something flawed about it as far as the Torah is concerned? It has a different status than other food? Or is the focus of the prohibition on me? As if to say, the food is fine. You just wait long enough, by tomorrow it'll be just fine. You'll feel just fine. Today, you have a problem, because it's Yom Kippur, and therefore you are not allowed to partake of any food. There's nothing wrong with the food. You need to abstain. If a person takes an oath not to eat a certain type of food, that food hasn't become trade for him. He has an obligation to uphold his oath. The focus is the person. So, we have two poles here, and that should be quite clear, because this is classic Brisker terminology. If you've ever heard gavra and chefza, anything could be a gavra and chefza. That's why one has to be careful not to get swallowed up here. But the treif of food is qualitatively different as far as the Torah is concerned than kosher food. That's the item itself. The Yom Kippur, all food is the same. You have the problem. You are, that is the gavra. And if that is so, then let us hesitantly proceed towards chametz on Pesach. For 8 days of the year, you are not allowed to eat or get benefit from chametz. And let us throw out the question, why not? Or not so much why not, but what to make of this? What's happened? How do you look at chametz for these 8 days, 7 days? Shall we say that, listen, this is a perfectly kosher, this has 3 hechsherim on this loaf of bread. It couldn't be more kosher. It happens to be that for 8 days you need to abstain. Your relationship to chametz on Pesach is like your relationship to food on Yom Kippur. But a week before Pesach and a week after Pesach, it's perfectly fine. You go through a certain change on Pesach that you need to abstain from chametz. That could be. And that would align it more with Yom Kippur. The focus would be on you, the person. Or the gavra. Or, shall we say, that rather what happens on Pesach is that for 8 days of the year, chametz becomes treif. As treif as non-kosher food. And worse. Now, that is the epicenter of the question. How to relate to the well-known isurim of eating and getting benefit from chametz. The problem rests with me or with the item. Now, I submit that this sounds like the most highly speculative question when it comes to Pesach. It could take you 7 days just to get to the bottom of this question, and by the time you're finished, you can eat it either way. But let us consider a very practical ramification of this question. Namely, a person lives in America, and they come, as they should, at least for regalim, to Eretz Yisrael, very nice. Now, they wish to leave their situation in America with their affairs in order. And so they get in touch with their rabbi, and he knows what's what, and they arrange a mechiras chametz, kedas ukedin. Very nice. Except, the problem is, if indeed, let us assume that it is a non-specific sale, So if the norm is that the chametz will be sold shortly before the sixth hour of Pesach, we have an interesting shaila. Because in America, when it's shortly before the sixth hour of Pesach, that's where your chametz is. You, in the meanwhile, are in Israel. And you are 6 or 7 hours in the future. And you have already passed the point in time where it's after Chatzos and after the sixth hour for you. And at this point, this question becomes all-consuming, if you pardon the expression. Because if we say that the focus of the prohibition is you, it's your relationship with Chametz, so then the important question will be, well, where are you now? And if it's already after the sixth hour of Pesach for you, you've already entered into the zone where all your Chametz is forbidden to eat and to get benefit from. Once that's true, you can't sell it, and no one can sell it for you. And that Mechira would be void. For everybody back in the States, it's before the time of Isser, but for you, it's post the time. But if we say that the focus of the prohibitions of Chametz is on the Chametz, so we would presumably say that the critical location is where is the Chametz, and the Chametz is located in an area at the time that it's sold prior to the sixth hour, and therefore the sale would be valid. And this is a question, of course, which is nogea to anyone who travels in that way. And it's the machlokas aposkim, but the preponderance of the Psak Halacha, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, and others, is that the focus here is on the person. And therefore, under these circumstances, you could not rely on a normal sale of your chametz in the States, because by the time they sell the chametz, it's too late for you, and your chametz is beyond sale. What is the answer? Well, nowadays, when people are alert to this, there are two very simple solutions. Number one, you can arrange with the rabbi back home that the sale should actually go into effect a number of hours before, which is even before the sixth hour where you are here in Israel. Or alternatively, you can just sell your chametz here in Israel, which is also considered to be a viable sale, and therefore, but nonetheless, you, and therefore the sale will go through before the sixth hour here in Israel, in which case you're perfectly safe. The only counter consideration is what will happen to you on the other side. Because if you don't specify, and if you sell your chametz here in Israel, so as far as they're concerned, here in Israel, Pesach lasts for 7 days. But if you are from Chutz Laaretz, Pesach lasts for 8 days. So at the point that the sale comes back, Motzei Chag is actually the middle of the 8th day of Pesach for you, and that's another fine point that needs to be worked out between you and your rabbi, that he should not be in such a hurry to get your chametz back for you, because it's still, you have another day of Pesach. But in any event, it's most fascinating, I believe, number one, to be aware formally of all of these basic principles with regards to chametz. They accompany each and every Jew as he enters into Pesach. And also for me, it's particularly fascinating to see how what is such in principle or at the outset, the most abstract question imaginable becomes absolutely halacha l'maaseh in a way that no one ever spoke about prior to the last 100 years or so, when differing time zones became such an issue. On the flip side, and this is good news for my in-laws who will be arriving from Australia in a couple of weeks, the converse would be true as well, that their chametz actually enters Pesach well before they do, and if they would rely on the kula aspect, they would actually be able to sell their chametz here, even though at the time the sale goes through here, their chametz is already enjoying the evening of Pesach. So, that is a matter of halacha. And from there, let us move to the center of Seder night, which is the mitzvah of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim. Now, Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim, to tell the story of our experiences in Mitzrayim, is one of the Tariq mitzvahs. It's the most unusual mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to tell the story. It's mitzvah 157, as far as the Rambam is concerned, number 21 for the Sefer Chinuch. And every mitzvah, of course, has a source in the Torah. Okay. What is the source of the mitzvah of telling the story of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim? Well, I believe we may presume that if anyone were asked this question, the answer is actually to be found explicitly in the Haggadah. The Torah says in Shmos, Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Ches, V'higadata lavincha bayom ahu lemor bavrozeh asa Hashem ni b'tzeisim mi Mitzrayim. And Vihigadata is where the concept of Haggadah comes from, to tell the story. And how do we know it refers to Seder night? Bavorzeh lo amarti ela bishar sheish matzah umaror munachim lefanecha. And that's the Seder night. Okay. Now that we've all established that, let's watch the Rambam not say that. And that is in the Hilchos Chametz Matzah, in Terek Shvi'i, Halachas Aleph and Beis. And let's watch carefully how the Rambam presents the mitzvah of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim. In Halacha Aleph, Mitzvas Asei Shel Torah, Lesaper Benisim Viniflo'os, Shenasu La'avoseinu B'Mitzrayim, B'Leil Chamisha Osar B'Nisan. The mitzvah to tell the story on the 15th of Nisan, Shene'emar Zochor Es Hayom Hazeh Asher Yitzasa Mi Mitzrayim. We weren't expecting that. Those words, Zochor Es Hayom Hazeh Asher Yitzasa Mi Mitzrayim, are also taken from Parshas Bo, from Shmos Perek Yud Gimel, earlier on in the Perek, Pasuk Gimel. So we're expecting Vigadat Levincha. Rambam hasn't mentioned Vigadat Levincha. Zochor es hayom hazeh, asher yitzasa mi Mitzrayim. Kamo she'ne'emar, zochor es yom haShabbos. He draws a parallel between that and zochor es yom haShabbos, of which a great deal has been spoken. And then the Rambam says, Uminayin she'beleil chamisha asar. How do we know that this mitzvah applies on the evening of the 15th? Talmud Lomar, and finally the Rambam unleashes for us, Vigadata Levincha Bayomahu Leimor Ba'avur Zeh. Because the word Zeh in Lashon HaKodesh refers to the physical proximity to an object, to be able to point to it, all of the Zehs in the Torah, and therefore Ba'avur Zeh is Bishar Sheish Matzo Umoror Munachim Lefanecha. So the timing we get from Ba'avur Zeh, timing is everything. But the actual mitzvah comes from Zachor. Says the Rambam, Va'af al pi she'en lo ben. And of course, if that's true, then it makes a difference if your son is at the Seder, if you have a son, if your son is at the Seder, because Zachor is open. It's non-denominational. It's like Zachor is Yom HaShabbos Lekadsho. It makes a difference if your son is there, you have a mitzvah of Kiddush. So it makes a difference who else is there, you have a mitzvah to tell the story. That said, if we move now to Halacha Beis, the Rambam continues, Mitzvah lehodia labonim. Vafilu lo shalu. It's a mitzvah unilaterally to tell your children, even if they didn't ask, Shenemar vihigadata labincha. So in Halacha Beis, vihigadata labincha comes back. It comes back to tell you that there is a mitzvah to talk to your son about, regardless of whether or not they asked. It turns out that, according to the Rambam, there are no less than two sources in the Torah for the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. There is Vihigadata, of which we are very familiar, which the Haggadah talks about, but there is also Zochor. And of course, should we ask the question, although we can already intuit the answer, well, why would we need two sources for one mitzvah? Generally speaking, every mitzvah has one source. One source yields a mitzvah. Why would this mitzvah need two? Manishtana ha-mitzvah zos mikol ha-mitzvos. So the answer is very simple. It's actually assembled in front of us. Because each verse is revealing for us or giving us a different aspect of the mitzvah. That is to say, the mitzvah of Zachor, the verse of Zachor, lets us know that it is not conditional upon your son being there, which is very important, because some mitzvahs are. A father has a mitzvah to redeem his firstborn son. If he doesn't have a firstborn son, he doesn't have a mitzvah. There is no concept of performing the mitzvah without that. And therefore, you need a verse to let you know that ultimately this mitzvah is non-conditional upon your son being there. That's, of course, important. That said, you also need the second pasuk of Yigalat HaLevincha to let you know that if your son is there, there is a special mitzvah that has not been fulfilled, or a special branch, shall we say, of the mitzvah, that has not been fulfilled until you tell your son the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And in fact, the source for the Rambam, as he mentions in the Sefer HaMitzvos, where he gives a basic presentation of the mitzvah, of course that's what the Rambam does in Sefer HaMitzvos, he quotes the Michilta of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, and which really lays it out in this way. The Michilta says, V'higadat l'vincha, very nice, but that's if your son is there. And if he's not, what then? Says the Michilta, Zochor es hayom hazeh, asher yetzasah mimitzrayim. So that setup of the two tiers, shall we say, of the mitzvah, is really to be sourced in the Michilta of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, as quoted by the Rambam in the Sefer Mitzvahs, and codified by him here in the Halacha. We should note that it should be mentioned that if we look at Rashi's comments, the Perush on the Torah, to Parshas Bo, in Shmos, Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Gimel, where it says, Zachor es hayom hazeh asher yetzasah mimitzrayim, says Rashi, Lomad, from here we learn, Shemazkir in Yetzias Mitzrayim, that we mention the going out of Egypt, Bechol Yom, every day. So, the Rashi has differed on a fundamental point from the Rambam. As far as the Rambam is concerned, that pasuk of Zachor, together with Vigalata, combine to give you the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim on Leil HaSeder. For Rashi, Zachor, the whole year, every day, much closer to Kol Yimechayecha, Yimechayecha, Kol Yimechayecha, but Zachor is every day, which means as far as Rashi is concerned, the special mitzvah of Seder night is going to be funded solely by the pasuk of Vihigalata Levinta. What's most fascinating is the Sefer HaChinuch, which I opened just a few days ago, I couldn't believe my eyes, because the Sefer HaChinuch classically follows the Rambam very faithfully. But when it comes to this mitzvah, says the Sefer HaChinuch, there's a mitzvah to tell the story, and he really starts out sounding like the Rambam to tell the whole story, as it says, V'higadat levincha. And says the Sefer HaChinuch, when the pasuk says bincha, it doesn't mean specifically your son, but it means anyone who's available. So with that, the Sefer HaChinuch, he broadened the scope of the mitzvah to tell the story to anyone there from within the pasuk of V'yigalat Levincha, which for the Rambam clearly is not the case. Levincha means your son specifically. If your son isn't there, you have another pasuk called Zachor. But it seems that the Sefer HaChinuch is aligning himself with Rashi, that Zachor is for every day. There's only one pasuk to give you the mitzvah on Seder night. That's V'yigalat Levincha. It's going to basically give you everything, because bincha is lav dafka.
Does bincha cover daughters as well?
Yes. Okay. Yes. And possibly even grandchildren, which is very interesting. Because not only do we say, b'nei bonim harehim kebonim, right, v'galata levincha, sometimes the grandchildren are the only ones who are listening anyway. But there is a special, some say there is a special mitzvah on Ashrei Mi that has this, but a special mitzvah on Seder night for a grandfather to tell his grandchildren, because there is a pasuk in the beginning of Parshas Bo which says, Uleman tisaper ba'aznei bincha uven bincha eis asher salati b'mitzrayim, which almost parallels the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, v'hudatam levanecha v'levnei vanecha, and therefore there's a special place in the heart of the mitzvah for a grandparent to tell the grandchild. But certainly, sons and daughters are the same.
Today we live in times when the grandson can tell the grandfather.
Yes.
It will be the opposite.
Yeah.
The son tells the father.
Yes, I'm aware of that.
The father did not learn.
Yes, exactly. That's what, in a sense, one could look upon that benignly as Veheshiv Leiv Ovos Abonim, Veleiv Bonim Alavosam. But yes, so maybe another way of saying it's a Seder night is for one night of the year the children actually listen to the parents. But be that as it may. Interestingly, grammatically important to notice, what's moving Rashi to say that, I think, to say that Zachor is the whole year round, is because the word Zachor, which we would translate as remember, Zachor, remember, so we should know, Zachor does not mean remember. Remember, the word for remember, the command is Zachor. Zachor is not a command form. Zachor is actually an abstract form. It means remembering, actually. Like Haloch Uvacho, Zachor, remembering. So actually, the literal translation of the pasuk, I wonder if anyone translates this way in English, but it happens to be true, Zachor means remembering. Now, that means that it's not in any way qualified. And the reason why for Rashi is because it applies the whole time. It's not bound by anything because it's not restricted grammatically because it's not restricted time-wise. It applies the whole time. And by the way, as far as Rashi is concerned, that's true for Zohar Tzioma Shabbos Lekacho, because Rashi says Zohar means remember it the whole week. So that's Rashi, in a sense, Lishitoso, that the grammatical form of Zohar, which is not qualified in any way, so the mitzvah is not qualified. It applies the whole time, not only on Shabbos, and not only on Pesach, the whole year round. Whereas for the Rambam, Zohar of Shabbos is Kiddush specifically, and therefore Zohar on Shabbos, and therefore Zohar of Pesach is specifically the Leil HaSeder. But I would just like to, while we're looking at this Rambam, to notice something. It's our final comment on this Rambam for the time being. It's from Rav Soloveitchik, and it is truly a wonder. And that is, there is no question that the mitzvah on Seder night is more than the mitzvah the whole year round. The whole year round, you just need to mention it. As soon as you say Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim, you're done. Of course, on Seder night, you have to tell the story. How do we know that? Well, everyone points to the pasuk Vihigalata Levincha, because the term Haggadah, and Haggadah means to really lay it out and tell the story, which is true. The problem is, the term Haggadah only applies in one of the two verses, Vihigalata Levincha. But what if your son isn't there? So if your son isn't there, so you're not working off the verse of Vihigalata Levincha. You go back to what? Zohar. What does Zohar tell you? Tell a story? No. Zohar means mention it. And by the way, as is true for Zohar, Siyama Shabbos, Lekacho, all you need to do is mention Shabbos, the special nature of Shabbos. You don't have to tell the story of the creation of the world for Zohar, and you don't have to tell the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim for Zohar, Siyam, Asher Yetzasim Mitzrayim. So that now is a very difficult question, because having isolated two sources, and if we place a mechitza between them, and we say that Vihigalata Levincha is when your son is there, and Zohar is if he's not there, so all of the story comes Vihigalata Levincha. But if you're working only off Zohar, where does the story come from? That's a good shaila. Could it be, and it isn't, that if your son isn't there, and it's just Zohar, so you don't really have to tell the story? That's unthinkable, and happens not to be true. Because the Rambam said, Mitzvahs asei shel Torah lisaper, tell the story, shine emar, Zohar, esayom, ashiyatasim imitayim. But how did the story come from Zohar? Rav Soloveitchik, for a number of years, gave a shiur on the yortzeit of his father. And they were extraordinary shiurim, very long, not for the faint of heart, from what I've heard of them. They lasted a number of hours. And towards the beginning, he raises this question. And Rav Soloveitchik says, we are forced to conclude, and it's actually explicit in the Rambam, that these two psukim, which ultimately they are co-sponsors of the mitzvah of telling the story, they're co-sources, they're not as distinct as they look. As if to say, they do not have this, Vigalata Levincha, if your son is there, Vigalata Levincha, if he's not there, Zohar, and never the twain shall meet. Not so. They're, on the one hand, they are two branches, but they're joined at the hip. There is interplay between them, to the extent that if you identify the story element within Vigalata Levincha, it will also, by osmosis here, by mitzvah osmosis, also make itself apparent within the mitzvah of Zohar. And in fact, when we say that it's a chiddush of Rav Soloveitchik, but first of all, it must be so, and secondly, it's explicit in the Rambam, because the flow of the Rambam was, he began by saying it's a mitzvah to tell the story, as it says, Zohar Esayom Hazeh, so far so good. And then the next words of the Rambam are, the last word of the second line, Uminayin Shebeleil Chamisha Asar, and how do we know that this is true on the night of the 15th? Talmud Lomar Vigalata Levincha. So the Rambam brings in Vigalata Levincha to tell you the timing of the mitzvah of Zohar. But we thought that the two were separate. You're either going the Zohar track or Vigalata Levincha track. So you can establish that you have to tell your son on the 15th, but who told you that the mitzvah of Zohar is on the 15th? But the Rambam uses them with great fluidity. You've got Zohar, and the timing of Zohar will come from Vigalata Levincha, says Rav Soloveitchik, and the nature of Zohar will come from Vigadata Levincha. Just like Vigadata is the story, so too Zohar, even if your son isn't there, is the story. And that's a big chiddush. Okay, so we've spoken a little bit about the source or sources and or sources for the mitzvah. And now let us come to the way that the story starts. It starts with a question. Four questions, in fact. For Maggid begins with questions. As the Torah itself always presents the story with the children asking questions first. Ki ish al habincha, if your child should ask you, then this is what you should say. You have one or two things to say if he doesn't ask, but in classic terms it starts ki ish al habincha. And the reason is that experientially information goes in when it has been precipitated by a difficulty, by a question. Just to, in today's parlance, download information has very little emotional effect on a person, and probably barely anything else either. But as far as the Torah is concerned, for Seder night, it needs to be an emotional experience. You need to be emotionally impacted. The impact will come from being set on edge, from being bothered by certain things until Yetzias Mitzrayim comes in as the answer for that. I believe that that's part of the pasuk which says "V'higadata levincha b'yomahu leimor." The word "hagada," actually, one of its meanings, as Rashi tells us in Parshas Yisro, is things that are difficult, like from the word "gidim," tough. Koshim kegidim, v'saged levnei Yisrael. Amira, on the other hand, is something which is pleasant, and in a sense, "V'higadata levincha b'yomahu leimor" means that you have to start by making things difficult for the child. That he should be bothered by things. Because if he's not bothered by anything and he's not interested, if he's not interested in the question, he's not going to be interested in the answer. And therefore, vigadata means make life difficult for him. Make things unusual for him. So that he should be curious. He should be aroused to ask something. And then, leimor, then the answer to the question will mean something for him. Which is interesting. We've mentioned in the past, Rashi says that the Eino Yodea Lishol, who normally is like looking to go under the radar. Ein yodea lishol, he doesn't bother you, you don't bother him. That's not true. Says the Pasuk, at pesachlo, open him up, right? Says Rashi, I think we would have understood, at pesachlo means, listen, what can you do? Time's getting on, it's almost hatzos, higiyas man, something or other. So he's not asking, so just tell him the answer anyway. Rashi says, no. At pesachlo means, if he's not asking, you need to make him ask. Put the situation to him and see, is there anything that bothers you this evening? According to some, manishtana, from a certain point of view, it's a shared pool of questioning. What about this? What about this? Something has to bother you. Nothing bothers you? Are you awake? If you're awake, something has to bother you. And if nothing bothers you, we'll make something bother you. Because vigadata levincha, and then comes the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Some say, well, at is the feminine, psaf is the, I would say it's a joint effort. Sometimes it takes the two of them anyway. And in fact, Rav Huttner, in a classic comment in the Pachad Yitzchak, says that the question and answer element of Yetzias Mitzrayim is embedded even in the Hallel. Because as much as the Hallel goes in a linear way, and every pasuk is wonderful beyond description, but when it comes to Yetzias Mitzrayim, it actually enters into question and answer form. Hayom ra avayonos, hayar de yisav le'ochor. Very nice. So then the halal starts. One moment. Malacha hayom kisanos. Why are you going backwards? Right? Why are you running away? Hayad and tisa l'ochor. What's going on here? That's a Yetzias Mitzrayim approach. Because when it comes to Sibu Yetzias Mitzrayim, information is not fed in a linear way. It is wound up by a question and then unleashed as the answer. The words of the Ibn Ezra, Hapliya hisibas hachachma. Wonderment is the source of knowledge. If you never wonder about anything, you'll never fully come to appreciate any knowledge. And so, for us, in a practical terms, this takes the form of manishtana. It's interesting to note that even the basic translation of the word manishtana is not a simple matter. I think that the standard translation is, how is this night different from all other nights? Or if you pay just a little bit more money, wherefore is this night different from all other nights? Which just means, how is this night different than other nights? But actually, how would be eich, and perhaps what you mean to say is why. But the pasuk doesn't say lama nishtana. The pasuk says ma nishtana. And literally, therefore, the word ma means what. And because that is true, many mefarshim say that the word ma is not actually a question itself. It's a statement of wonder. Like you would say, ma rabu ma'asecha Hashem. Ma enosh ki tizkerenu. Ma nishtana halayla zeh means, is the child exclaiming, how different is this night from all other nights? And therefore, unlike the standard translation, how is it different? It is a statement. How different it is. Of course, the child wants to know why. But that's just in terms of translating the words. Now, with regards to the role of the question within the mitzvah of Maggid, so let us ask an interesting shaila. Maggid starts with questions. Why? What does that mean? Does that mean that the story ultimately is made up of questions and answers? As if to say that the mitzvah of Maggid contains two components, she'elos and shuvos. Could that be? And that the she'elos are part of the mitzvah to begin in question four? Or shall we say that the she'elos are the launch of the mitzvah? They make you ready to give the mitzvah, but they themselves are not part of the story. To put it into perhaps a Hebrew formula, shall we say that Maggid is made up of she'ela u'tshuva, both component parts, question and answer, or perhaps the definition of Maggid is tshuva l'she'ela, an answer to a question. It needs to be set up by a question, but actually it's only the answer that's Maggid. And should we ask, well, what difference does it make if the questions are part of the mitzvah or not? The answer is very simple. Every adult, male and female, has a mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Now, sometimes you only have one person talking at the Seder, which is fine. Let's say the one who leads the Seder. That's fine, because everyone else hears what they're saying, and that's the classic Shomea Ka'oneh. They're Yotzei by the person who's talking. That's very nice. But typically, the Manishtana is sung by a child who's under Bar Mitzvah. That means that the question parts of the proceedings are said by a person who cannot be motzi you. A child can't be motzi you in a mitzvah. But if the questions are part of the mitzvah, then how can you rely on a child to ask the questions? No one else asks the questions. They just start to answer. It sounds very much like that actually the questions are not part of the mitzvah. The questions precipitate the mitzvah, but the mitzvah only starts with Avodim Hayinu. So the child is entitled, his role is to set you up for the mitzvah. As surely as his role for Pidyon HaBen is to be born, his role on Seder night is to ask the questions, but that is when your mitzvah begins, with Avodah Mayinu. But what's most fascinating is, the Rambam, in the Halachos, in Mishneh Torah, Perek Ches, Halacha Beis, of Chametz U'Matzah, he says, they pour the second cup, V'kan HaBen Shoel, and here the son asks, V'omer HaKore, and the reader says, Ma nishtana halayla hazeh mikol halelos. It sounds from the Rambam that actually the correct procedure is the child asks, and he needs to ask, but the questions are not left with the child, but rather once the child has finished asking, the reader goes over the questions. Haben shoel, and then the omer hakore. Why does the kore need to do chazorah on the questions of the child? So it seems, according to the Rambam, that because the questions themselves are part of the mitzvah, and therefore as much as you need the child to ask, but you can't rely on his having asked the questions to be, so to speak, motzi everyone in the questions of the Seder. And that's why the one who's leading the Seder needs to go over the questions. That's how it seems from the Rambam. That said, the Ramah, for us, Ashkenazim, the Ramah says explicitly in Siman Taf Ayin Gimel, Si'iv Zayin, that once the child has asked the manishtana, there is no need for the father to go over, which seems to imply that indeed the Maggid itself are the answers. They're only answers if somebody asked, but the asking sets up the mitzvah. It's not part of the mitzvah. And if the one who set up isn't even chayiv in mitzvahs because he's a child, no matter. He asked the questions, now the mitzvah begins with Avodim Hayinu. And in fact, the Vilna Gaon, in his Perush to the Shulchan Aruch, says that actually the words of the Rambam are sourced in the Gemara. Because the Gemara in the last Perek of Psachim, Daf Kuf Tesvav Amud Beis, tells us of a Seder that took place in the house of Rabbah, the great Rabbah of the Gemara. And living in Rabbah's house was Abaye, of Abaye and Rava fame. Abaye actually was adopted by Rabbah. Abaye was orphaned at birth, and Rabbah took him in and raised him. And the Gemara tells of one of their Sedarim, because one of the things that one does is just after Kiddush, we take the Seder plate away. Or actually, in the times of the Gemara, where everyone had their own mini table, he took the whole table away. And Abaye said to him, why are you taking the table away? We haven't even started. Right? The servants came in to take the table away. Abaye said, we haven't even started yet. Why are you taking the table away? And which means he fell into the classic Manishtana, because he noticed something was strange, and Rabbah was delighted. Rabbah said, we don't even need to say Manishtana anymore. Patartano son miloma Manishtana, because in a sense you said Manishtana, which is very interesting, because it sounds like the classic four Manishtanas, which of course are now part and parcel of the Haggadah for us, in principle it sounds like any shinui that is noticed by the child, he's in, he's hooked. And when he's hooked, so strike while the iron is hot. And if you didn't say the set text of Manishtana, Rabbah didn't seem to be bothered by that. However, says the Vilna Gaon, but just one moment. As true as it may be that his question, why are you taking the tables away, is a form of Manishtana, but how could you say that he exempted you from saying Manishtana? If the child, even if he said Manishtana, couldn't exempt you because it's part of the mitzvah of Magid, you'd have to go over it anyway. So regardless of his question, you now need to say Manishtana. Says the Vilna Gaon, we see from here that the Manishtana is entirely in the domain of the child. If he says the four questions, let him say that. If he says something else, if he asks another question, it'll be another question. But by the time he's finished, he has exempted you from Manishtana, which is the Pesach of the Ramah. Let the child say it. The adults do not need to repeat it. And what's interesting is, as Rav Kasher points out, in the Haggadah Shleima, there is a Ksavya Teiman, right, a Yemenite version or manuscript of the Rambam, and of course the relationship with the Teimanim and the Rambam is very special in itself. And our version of the Rambam, just to remind ourselves, is Haben Shoel, the son asks, Ve'omer Hakore, and then the leader of the Seder says, which implies that the leader of the Seder also needs to say. But in the Ksavyad of Teiman, it says Haben Shoel Ve'omer La Kore. The child says to the Kore, which actually corroborates even the position of the Ramah, that the leader doesn't have to say any of Manishtana. He is spoken to by the child. Nonetheless, there are those who are noeg, based on the common reading of the Rambam, that the adults say it, but minag, the widespread minag, is that the children say it, and then we get on to Avodim Hayinu. What is important is that the children should hear at least Avodim Hayinu. Of course, I don't know if this is this anymore, but there was a time when the children are primed and prepped through all sorts of mechanisms to say Manishtana perfectly, and as soon as they finish the fourth question, they're showered with gifts and sent on their way, without ever having been told the answer to any of their questions, and no one notices. And the Mishnah Berurah already discusses this phenomenon and says, be sure at the very least to keep them until they've answered your question, until you've answered their question. With regards to the number of she'elos, well, what's interesting is the corpus of Manishtana is actually to be found in the Mishnah. All of those Mishnayos in the 10th Perek of Psachim describe the Seder. But actually, there is one question in the Mishnah, in the Manishtana of the Mishnah, that is not in our Manishtana, and we'll instantly understand why. Because one of the questions is, Shebechol Alelos, Anu Ochlim, Basar, Tzali, Shaluk, Umavushal. Here's the child. On all other nights, we eat meat prepared in any way. It could be cooked, it could be stewed, it could be roasted. Halayla Hazeh, Kulo Tzali. Tonight, only roasted. Now, we're not familiar with that, but what's the background? Of course, the reference is to the Korban Pesach. The Korban Pesach could only be, ki imtzli esh, could only be eaten roasted, and therefore, that was the Manishtana from Temple Times, that question. Nowadays, we don't have that question. The halacha happens to be that we make a point of not having roasted meat just in order to avoid any misunderstanding that we intend this to be the actual Korban Pesach itself, so things are, if anything, reversed. But that is the difference between the Manishtana of the Mishnah and the Manishtana of today. That said, there are still only four questions in the Manishtana of the Mishnah. So the question is, well, how can that be? If they have another one, there should be five. It should be noted, incidentally, that the Rambam in the Mishnah Torah lists five questions. For in the Mishnah Torah, he puts everything together. You've got R4, plus in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, as far as the Rambam is concerned, the Mishnah Torah is written for the time of the Beis HaMikdash, unless told otherwise. And therefore, you have actually a total of five questions. But interestingly, in our versions of the Mishnah, there are still only four questions. It is a dynamic equilibrium. Not the number has been preserved. But which question is missing then from the Mishnah? The answer is that if you look in the Mishnah, you'll see that there is the fourth question. What we call the fourth question is not there. Namely, Shebechol HaLeilos, Ono Ochlim, Ben Yoshvin, Ben Mesubim, HaLeil HaZeh, Kulonu Mesubim. It's not there. The question is, well, if it's not there, then how did it become part of our Manishtana? The Korban Pesach used to be different, but we don't have that anymore. But what about Mesubim? If it's noteworthy, it's noteworthy. Well, why is it not to be found in the Mishnah? The Vilna Gaon, in his Perush on Hagodesh HaPesach, and the Aruch HaShulchan, incidentally, without having seen the Perush of the Gaon, intuited was mechaven to what the Gaon said. It's something most fascinating. Namely, the reason why the question of Ben Yoshvin, Ben Mesubim is not to be found in the Mishnah is because in the time of the Mishnah, to eat reclining was not considered that unusual at all. Many people did it, and certainly if it's a Yom Tov, you did it. Now, I think we can understand that the child intuits that it's a Yom Tov. That's for sure. But, you know, he's had other Yomim Tovim. Every Shabbos, presumably, they would eat that way. Every Yom Tov, they would eat that way. And therefore, as long as what he sees that people are doing is Yom Tov Dik, that's not yet grounds for a question of Manishtana, Halai Lazeh. And that's why, for example, some say, or the Aruch HaShulchan says, that there is no question of the Arba Kosos. We who have it organized in that way, four cups. But, of course, it's only the one cup, it's just filled four times. Well, four, three, five, as far as the child is concerned, that wine is commonly consumed at a meal. If there's a cup and there's enough to fill it four times over, and maybe even more, so that just means that's Yom Tov. That's not a Manishtana. That's just a good Yom Tov. And people would be wearing their Yom Tov clothes, and that's also not Manishtana. He understands it's a Yom Tov. Anything that could be put down to a special, a festive day, for as far as the child is concerned, doesn't raise a flag for him. Only things that are unusual. Every Yom Tov we have chometz and matzah, not just matzah. Every Yom Tov we don't focus on maror per se, shnei matbilim. But the question of mesubim in the times of the Mishnah was not strange enough to be considered a candidate for a question for the Manishtana. What's amazing is, and here we should note that there are certain rishonim who noted, I mean, it's an observation that anyone will note, certainly in many parts of the world, it is no longer the way of free people to lean, to recline. We would never dream of it did we not have Seder night. If you go into any banquet, even the most expensive, in Western civilization certainly, you will find people sitting upright. And it's not because they're not free. It doesn't has a connotation of freedom anymore. So the question is, so now what? Initially, people would recline because that was a way of expressing celebration and freedom. Nowadays, they don't do it anymore. So what shall we say? If it's not the way of free people, so should we stop reclining? Says the Vilna Gaon, no! And the reason why not is because there is an active erech on Seder night to do things that are unusual. Now, generally speaking, we need to go out of our way to do things that are unusual. We take the table back, and we're really filling up the first course, and we might be in the Shnei Pa'amim. We do all of those things. It happens to be that reclining is inbuilt part of the Seder, because when it becomes obsolete as a celebratory gesture, it moves naturally into an unusual gesture, which makes it an instant candidate for Manishtana. And therefore, says the Vilna Gaon, reclining has always fulfilled a purpose. It just shifted departments as things moved. Initially, it was celebratory, which is its own value. Subsequently, it became unusual, which is its further own value, and hence it's made its way into the Mandelstam, which is a fascinating observation. One would need to ponder how that would relate to the halachas. If a person ate without leaning, the halachas remain important to be consulted. It remains something that is a requirement of the night in various forms. For that, one consults one's Seder guide. So just to conclude for this evening, after all, we spent the last few moments building up Manishtana. It's worthwhile noting that the Mefarshim are asking, what is the answer to Manishtana? In other words, our immediate response is, Avodim Ayinu Lefar B'Mitzrayim. Now, if your child is a Yekah, he will have a problem with this, because he has counted four questions. You have answered maybe one of them, or maybe two. As if to say, he wanted to know, right, why this, and the answer is, we were slaves and now we're free. Hashem took us out, Avodim Ayinu Lefar B'Mitzrayim, V'Yetzeinu Hashem Nakeinu Misham B'Yod Chazoka V'Zor Netuya. Apparently that alone has answered all four of his questions. That's a powerful answer. But why is that so? There seems to be sentences missing. And that's why we dip twice. Why? And that's why we mesubim. Why? That's why all these unusual things have happened. If the question of Manishtana is why are things so unusual, so the answer cannot be we're celebrating. That's the point. Because celebrate. But why celebrate in an unusual way? In fact, the Be'er Yosef explains that as much as we call it, and it's not incorrect to call it, some would call it the four kashas, some would call it the arba she'elos, at the very least, four questions. But according to many Mefarshim, these are not four questions. These are really just one question with four expressions. And the question has been stated at the very beginning. Ma nishtana halayla hazeh, what an unusual night. So many abnormal things seem to be happening. So we say to the child, really? Like what? Oh, he's got a list ready. We're not eating chametz, only matzah. Everything about tonight is different. It's abnormal than any other night. We're dafke misubim, and we're being a shnei pa'amim, and some of those things are specific. They exist only to be unusual. Karpas, first and foremost, is only to be unusual. So that the child should notice something unusual is going on. And all of the questions ultimately are tributaries of this central question, Manishtana, why are we doing things that are so unusual? That's a good question. But the answer is stunning. Because it brings to mind a comment that I heard from my cousin in the name of Shlomo Zalman Orbach. We refer to this evening as, to the evening of first night of Pesach, as Leil HaSeder. Reb Shlomo Zalman, who was responsible for all of the halachic circuitry of Seder night, said he never understood why it's called Leil HaSeder. He would have called it Leil Hefech HaSeder, the night of complete lack of Seder. There is practically not one halacha that moves in a straight line. Between Kiddush Makom Suda and making a bracha on Karpas, but then washing, but not making a bracha, and having a mind for this, and not having a mind for that, and then you lean, then you recline, then you forgot, and then you make another bracha, and then another cup is another bracha, and where what happened to Lecha Mishneh, and you drop the matzah and pick up the matzah, and nothing is normal on Seder night. And that the child picks up on that. And we do abnormal things, lishma, says the Be'er Yosef. What is the answer to that? The answer lies in a key phrase. We say, Avodim Ayin Lefar B'Mitzrayim. V'yetzeinu Hashem Elokeinu Misham B'yod Chazaka U'Bizro'u Netuya. Yod Chazaka. Strong hand. What is the meaning of that all too familiar expression, a strong hand? What's strong about it? And what would a weak hand have looked like? Of course, if we're taken out, it's B'yod Chazaka. The Mefarshim say the Yod Chazaka, and by extension the Zroa Netuya, are references to the way that we were taken out. Kadosh Baruch Hu took us out in a way that was so outside any normal experience benissim, beniflos, bemasos, beosos, uvemosim, and it's part of the story, and that's how the Rambam began. It's a mitzvah to tell of the nissim and niflos. What are nissim and niflos? Abnormal experiences. And how do we mark that? By the Seder night, the so-called Seder night, being a succession of abnormal experiences. Everything about Seder night is unusual because that is to mark at every turn what was so unusual and completely beyond the normal of our experience of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And that is how Avodah Mayinu, B'yad Chazaka, U'Bezro Netuya, also finds its mark at every stage of the Seder night. We'll leave it over here for this evening and pick up next week in Mitzvah.